For many people, summertime means car trips with stops along the way at local fairs or historic sites. Author Christopher Kelly's road trips take him in search of a particular kind of history. He's written about it in his book, America Invaded. It's a state-by-state guide to fighting on American soil. Kelly begins America Invaded with the discovery of what's called Kennewick Man. In 1996, some college students were watching a hydroplane race on the Columbia River in Washington. One of the students pulled a human skull from the water. Turns out it was part of a skeleton that's 9,000 years old, give or take, and there was a stone spear point embedded in its hip. For Kelly, that spear wound was the most captivating thing about the gruesome discovery and the battle of some sort that it suggested. Christopher Kelly, as you point out in the book, America has invaded many countries through its history, but American soil has been the site of not just battles, but invasions of different kinds. What did you find?
Well, we found evidence of certainly of fighting in every single state in the Union. Now, when you talk about a state like Nevada, for instance, which doesn't have a coastline, which is, you know, harder to invade, so to speak, and you don't have a clear evidence of, say, an occupation of Nevada by outside forces. But nevertheless, you do have signs of fighting. I mean, for instance, you have the balloon bombs that were used in the latter stages of World War II that landed on over 15 different American states, including Nevada, for example.
And the balloon bombs, tell us about those that were launched by the Japanese.
Towards the end of World War II, 1944-45, there was a campaign of hot air balloons that were put into the jet stream, launched from Japan, traveled thousands of miles, and the idea was to try to set forest fires ablaze in the United States. And there hasn't been a lot of coverage of them because at the time there was a great deal of wartime censorship, and they didn't want people to panic, to think that a bomb might be landing in somebody's backyard. There's only one incident where there are actually fatalities attributed to that, and that was in Oregon in 1945. That was on a walk, on a hike in the woods after church, kind of a little Sunday school group stumbled on it, and actually six people, including five kids, were killed by the ignition of an incendiary bomb.
One of the things you did on your own road trip as you were compiling information for this book was to find certain sites that memorialized or at least were the exact location of some of these events. What do you think were the most impactful places?
Well, I think another example would be from my own home state of Washington, where you have the Hanford nuclear site, which was where they developed the plutonium that was used for the bomb that was dropped on Nagasaki that ended World War II. But this site, ironically, received a balloon bomb in the power lines in the spring of 1945. It was the only time in history that an American atomic facility was stopped by enemy action. But of course, the enemy had no idea that this had actually occurred.
Christopher, how are you defining invasion in the book? Do you count explorers as invaders? Is violence necessarily a part of it?
I think there's a fine line between exploration and invasion. If you take, for example, Captain Cook, who arrived in Hawaii twice. At first, he was seen by the native Hawaiians as being something of a godlike figure. But then when he returned to the Big Island of Hawaii on his second voyage there, he actually was killed and actually eaten. I mean, Captain Cook got cooked, so to speak, by the Hawaiians. So from his standpoint, he saw himself, I'm sure, as an explorer. But from the Hawaiians' perspective, some of them must have seen him as an invader as well.
And you can actually see the place, the little cove on the Big Island of Hawaii, where he was attacked.
That's right.
Take us up to Alaska now. The history of Alaska goes all the way back to the Paleolithic people more than 3 million years ago. Russian traders in the 18th century arrived on what are now Alaskan waters in pursuit of seal and animals with fur. What did they encounter with the indigenous people there?
Russia, of course, is in our headlines these days almost continually. But it's interesting as a historian to note the impact that Russia had going back into the 18th and 19th century on this country. For instance, if you go to Sitka today in Alaska, you'll find onion-domed churches in the Russian style. One of the other legacies of the Russian invasion occupation of Alaska, the indigenous people in Alaska, even to this day, the majority of them are Christian, but they're neither Roman Catholic nor Protestant. Protestant. They are Orthodox, which is a direct legacy of this Russian invasion, if you will, that lasted right up until 1867 when Alaska was sold to the United States of America.
If there is one thing that we should know about California and foreign influence in California based on an event, what would you say it is?
Well, one of the things that stuck out for me was the attack in World War II by a Japanese submarine on the Elwood Refinery on the coast of California. You had this submarine that surfaced near Elwood, California, which is near Santa Barbara, and used its deck gun to start shelling the refinery. No harm was really done, and nobody was killed or injured by the attack, but it did have a tremendous impact. And the Rose Bowl, of course, everybody knows, is played in Pasadena, California. The one exception to that happened after the Pearl Harbor attack, when initially the Rose Bowl was actually canceled, and the two teams, which was Oregon State and Duke, decided that the game would be played in North Carolina, in Duke. That is the one Rose Bowl in 1942 Rose Bowl was actually played in North Carolina because of the fear of a Japanese invasion or attack that might be imminent.
And is there a place in California for any visitors that you would especially recommend dealing with this history?
I think another place that's interesting is San Pascual, the battlefield near San Diego. This was fought between the Americans and the what were called the Californios, who were defending the Mexican control over California at the time. It was the most significant battle because it really was the victory for the Americans that led to California becoming part of the United States.
Your road trip, Christopher, took you to New England as well. What is it
Sure.
about this part of the Northeast U.S. that you found most remarkable in terms of American states, American territories being invaded?
One of the things that's astonishing about New England is even in Civil War history. I mean, the people think of the Civil War as being fought, you know, mainly, of course, in the South and except for Gettysburg and Pennsylvania. But in fact, Vermont was actually technically invaded. I mean, the town of St. Albans in Vermont in 1864, there were Confederates that crossed the border from Canada that invaded south, in other words, in the southerly direction to go into St. Albans, which is in the extreme north of Vermont. Here we talk today about the problematic nature of international borders. I mean, you had Confederates crossing the Canadian border during the Civil War, so it wasn't even an issue back in those days as well.
Tell us about the fight over Lake Champlain.
Gentleman Johnny Burgoyne in 1777 famously invaded New York from Canada. I mean, in a way, that's maybe the most significant invasion for American history, because, of course, this invasion was repulsed and Burgoyne was defeated and surrendered after the battles of Saratoga. And the surrender of John Burgoyne was what gave credibility to the American Revolution and led to France intervening on behalf of America during the American Revolution, which, of course, led to ultimately to the victory at Yorktown and to the creation of the United States.
One other thing, Christopher, I wanted to mention, and that is that you dedicate the book to two of your own ancestors.
I dedicated the book to Jane Wells, who was an ancestor of mine who was killed during the American Revolution at the Cherry Valley Massacre in upstate New York by Native Americans that had been recruited by the British to attack the American rebels. And also another ancestor of mine whose name was Captain Cortland Van Rensselaer, who was in the Union Army and died at Nashville during the American Civil War.
It strikes me that probably a lot of people listening to this have some kind of connection to some of these skirmishes, massacres, just as you did, that they don't even know about necessarily.
Many, many listeners out there will have had relatives who fought in American wars or perhaps were victims of as well. So yes, there. I think everybody has some connection to the conflicts that I describe in the book.
Christopher Kelly, co-author of America Invaded, thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.